Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Tony Bryant. He's an author and journalist for The Sur in English. He's lived in Andalusia since 1994 and has written various books on Spain and flamenco. In his latest book, A Cohort of Creative Bohemians and Other Interesting Individuals, he talks about some of the interesting people he's met over his 25 years on the Costa del Sol, including artists, literary figures, musicians, as well as local priests, sports personalities, actors, historians, the list goes on. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Good afternoon, Hannah.
Lovely to chat with you. How have you been?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me back again.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm just trying to remember the last time we spoke. It must have been a couple of years ago, was it?
I think I'm going to scare you now, Hannah. It was nearly 10 years ago.
Was it really?
It was, yeah, I only remember because I just published the book about the Gypsy family tree, and it was towards the end of 2012, 2013, so maybe 9 years ago. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it?
Isn't it? We must have been young then, Tony.
I think I'm certainly younger than I am now,
Hannah. So, living in Andalusia since 1994, you must have seen some incredible changes.
Yes, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, so I don't really like what I see. I understand that it's necessary on the coast, but I think a lot of, you know, some of the inland villages and that have survived, but it's changed incredibly. Some for the better, obviously, for the motorway networks and that we have now. It's a lot quicker to get anywhere. But it's, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of change, but I think the basis of the Costa del Sol is still very much the same.
Yes. And have you always lived in the same kind of area?
Yes, I've always been Torremolinos area. I work a lot in Seville, so I'm backwards and forwards at the moment, but my base is for the last 28 years has been Torremolinos.
And has there been a lot of change there specifically?
The town centre, yes. It underwent a complete facelift just prior to the pandemic, I think 2018-19. So the centre has been rejuvenated. So Torremolinos has, I think it lived on its reputation of what it was in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, when it was the playground of the rich. And over the years, it sort of deteriorated. But things began to change in 2015, and Torremolinos is now, I think, back up there with the rest of the top sort of resorts along the Costa del Sol.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't been in quite a few years, I must admit. I must come back and pay you a visit in Torremolinos. It'd be lovely to see.
Yes, I think you'd be shocked at the changes and the previous mayor did a lot for the town, and you know, they all say what they're going to do to get elected, but he actually followed through with a lot of the things that he got. The main thing is the pedestrianisation of the main centre of the town, Costa del Plaza, Costa del Sol. There's some interesting stuff going on. You know, we now have the only permanent Sabor Malaga market in Torremolinos. So things like that. So it's created a bit of a buzz in the town again.
Oh, fabulous. Yes, you want places to be able to modernise a little bit, perhaps, but still remain Spanish.
Yes, I think a lot of the places keep their traditions. It's like next weekend we have the Romeria and the Feria of Torremolinos. So that side of it's very traditional. But obviously, you know, like all towns and resorts along the coast, we rely on tourism. So that's one of the things that the councils and the town halls have to maintain.
I know we've talked about this before when we were talking about your various flamenco books, but how did you become a kind of go-to expert and an authority on flamenco?
It's a very long story, but basically I was a musician in England, not professional, so semi-professional musician. So when I came to live in Malaga, obviously, I was interested in the music, and one of the first clubs I was taken to was a very orthodox flamenco peña, and that was the planting of the seed, because I didn't understand it. My Spanish language was non-existent at the time, and to me it was little more than a noise. But being a lover of jazz and the blues, I understood there was a lot more to it than what I was experiencing on that first night. So I started to research, and being a journalist, it's a great thing to get hold of something that you know nothing about and then for it to become a passion. And I spent, I think, 10 years dashing around Andalusia to different festivals and events that were going on, and I was introduced to a lot of people, and doors started to open, and I don't know, it just snowballed from there.
And do you regularly go and watch flamenco now?
Oh, yes, still. I mean, this all started 20-odd years ago. I mean, the summer's great. Obviously, the last couple of years, it's been a bit hit and miss with the pandemic. But this year, there's been some incredible festivals. And they're not all, you know, most people think, oh, you need to go to Seville or, you know, wherever. But we have some great festivals in Malaga. And some of them have been going for more than 40 years. The Torremolinos Festival, I think, was the 38th edition this year. Halloween della Torre is another one that's, you know, they attract top artists, and that's the best place to go if you like the orthodox flamenco. Then that's the place to go and see it. So yes, I still with a passion.
And how do you explain it to people, because I think a lot of people, when they first hear it and don't know much about it, will probably also say, oh, it's noise. How do you kind of explain the kind of passions and the history behind it?
I think it's like most musical genres. You know, if you talk about the opera, if you go to the opera and you've never experienced it and you know nothing about it, then you will miss so much of what's going on. And flamenco is the same. It's not, I don't think, oh, it's so important for the language, because even though it's better to know what they're singing about, it's the passion and the whole meaning behind flamenco, because people look at it as just a style of music or a style of dance, where it is in fact a way of life. And if you look at the gypsy community, who in my opinion are the better performers of flamenco, it's something that they do, but it's not a form of entertainment as to say, you know, for other people. It's more to do with performing for themselves. So that obviously the family flamenco and the spontaneous little outbursts we see occasionally in an old bodega or on somebody's patio, that's when you get the true meaning of it, because it's simply for their own pleasure. And it's a very complex subject to get into, but as I say, it's a bit like the opera. The more you understand about what you're watching, the more you will enjoy it.
Yes, definitely. So tell us a bit more about this new book then, A Cohort of Creative Bohemians and Other Interesting Individuals.
I think the title soon to be just chopped down to Bohemians, a lot of people. But Hannah, we just spoke about, you know, I spent the last 20-odd years writing about Andalusian customs and flamenco and Semana Santa and all the wonderful aspects of life in Spain. And I didn't want to become pigeonholed as the author who only writes about flamenco and Andalusia. And I previously published a book about Seville, during the pandemic, and I thought, what do I do next? I was really at a loss. I thought, I need to move away from this, but I didn't really know where to go. And my partner said, Tony, you've been out here for getting on for 30 years, and the people you've interviewed in that time for the Sir in English and prior to that, he said, why don't you write something about, you know, your life as a journalist and a writer in Spain? And at first, I wasn't that convinced. And then I started sort of flicking through the archives at CERN English, looking for interesting interviews and articles that I'd produced for the paper. And I suddenly realized what we have on the Costa del Sol, as in the expat artistic community. I mean, there's untold musicians and authors and painters, of, you know, people that who really stand out in their field. And one of the things that really sort of grabbed my attention for the book was the fact that how a lot of these people come together in times of crisis. And if we look at, you know, the amount of different charities we have on the coast, these people forever get together and try to raise money for charities, for worthy causes, and for their contemporaries who were struggling. And suddenly it just started to come together. And it really is, the title is, I mean, a lot of the artists on the coast that I know are bohemian, but it doesn't apply to everyone, hence the subtitle of Other Interested Individuals, because aside from the artists, there's a lot of people on the Costa del Sol that do or have done extraordinary things.
Oh, definitely. It must have been difficult to know where to start and who to include and who not to include. I'm imagining it was quite a big process.
Yes, it was, because it, once you start something like this, I mean, the artists and a lot of these people are my friends. And the people who run the charities and people who do wonderful things for other people, you know, I suddenly realised what a community we have on this coast, you know. And there's people like, if we just take off the top of my head, Joan Hunt from Kudeka. I mean, there's an individual that really, really did something for the Costa del Sol that, you know, she was basically went out on her own in the beginning and formed this Kudeka, what we have today, you know. I mean, there's people like that who are selfless, you know, people that work constantly for other people. And that was one of the things that, and, you know, obviously there's other people who just had very interesting stories to tell.
Pick some others.
Some of my favourite, if I may, Hannah, I mean, there was one guy, he was a travel writer, and he was passing through Andalusia, and I'd arranged to interview him. And we got chatting, and he'd been to some of the most diverse places in the world. And one of the stories he told me, I said to him, what do your parents think about what you do? And he said, it's a bit awkward to explain. He said, because one of the projects I was involved in, I went to Africa, and we dug up a corpse and dressed it in order to dance in some ancient ritual.
What?
And the way he told it is if he was telling me he just sprayed his car or something, you know. That I mean, there was another guy who I interviewed for the paper several years ago who'd assisted his wife's suicide. And the story of it, it was just incredible to sit and listen to these people talking about these things that they've done. So, as I say, it's not only artists, it's not only people who produce art and music, it's people that have done extraordinary things and people that have these tales to tell.
Yes, it makes you realise doing a job like this when you're interviewing people, how most people, if not all people, have a story to tell. You know, everyone's had an interesting life in some way. You don't need to be famous or well-known or successful in order to be interesting. Everyone's interesting.
I think that, I mean, you will know more than anyone, Hannah, for the people you've interviewed over the years, but that is entirely true. And I think this is one of the things I try to get over with the book is, you know, sometimes as a journalist, maybe we shouldn't say this, but sometimes you get an assignment and you think, this doesn't look very exciting, you know, somebody's done that. And you go to these meetings and then you find out what these people have done aside from, you know, whatever you're there to talk to them about. And everybody has an incredible story behind them somewhere, you know. And it just, the more I looked into this, and I think one of the biggest problems was knowing where to stop.
Yes.
Because there was just so many, you know, and I had to sort of narrow it down and try to keep it within the form of the book. But it was something that I really, really enjoyed doing, because as a journalist, you know, you forget over the years the interviews you've done and somebody will mention, you think, oh, that rings a bell. And of course, once I started to reread all this stuff, I thought, wow, there's some incredible people on the coast.
Yes. Oh, it must have been lovely reminiscing and finding great interviews that you did 20 years ago and had forgotten about.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there was, you know, people that I met who just sort of turned up and spent 6 months working on their art on the coast. And, you know, I would come across people on the bus or, you know, it wasn't all people that I'd organised an interview with. You know, people you get chatting to in a plaza or in a bar. you know, some of them were so far back I could barely remember it until I read the article.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called A Cohort of Creative Bohemians and Other Interesting Individuals, until it's shortened to Bohemians, and it's by Tony Bryant, who we've been chatting with. Listeners can get the book from our website, tre.radio. Tony, thank you so much for joining us. Let's not wait 9 years till we chat again.
Yes, and thanks ever so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Anna.
Thanks, Tony. You take care.
Okay, and you now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.